Chunda Living Podcast. This is our first post-Chinese New Year podcast, and we're doing a rundown of recent events in Chengdu and news and other things which have caught our attention. So I'm Charlie, and I'm here with Dan and Eli. Say what's up.
What is up, gentlemen?
What's going on? So I guess the biggest piece of news in the past week or so was this Under the Dome video.
Absolutely, yeah. I wasn't even in China for the last 10 days, and there's so much news about this outside China.
Yeah,
TV, newspaper, everything in the United States.
So I think the tagline is like, it's China's inconvenient truth. It's the movie / documentary / TED Talk style movie that's supposed to make everybody more conscious of air pollution.
Right, so it's a Chinese-made expose-style documentary about the air pollution problems in China. And it's made by a woman who, by all accounts, is a patriot and supports the Chinese leadership, but really could not ignore the negative effects of the air pollution on the daily lives of citizens and tried to put that into a movie in a thoughtful way.
Yeah, and apparently the impact has been pretty big. It was viewed like 200 million times on Youku.
It's got to be more than that now. You mentioned that they showed some of it on the bus today.
Yeah, that was the weirdest thing. So at this point in the news, for all intents and purposes, it's been stripped from the Chinese internet, as far as I understand. And but I was riding the bus on the way over here, and on the little TVs on the bus, I saw this woman. Now I recognize her because I've seen just like clips. I haven't seen the full movie, but I've seen clips and screenshots from the movie, and it was definitely her. And then it was. I think it was followed. The clip was followed briefly by a little like green font. It said "I Kong Qi, I Ziji."
Uh huh. Yeah. Well, the version that they were showing on public transportation was probably some sort of politically sanitized, overdubbed version that was like muted from the original audio and then had subtitles on top
Absolutely.
Of it.
That said, or they said, like, select whichever part promotes the agenda that they want.
Fog is an a widespread natural phenomena that affects many cities.
Right.
Many people mistake naturally produced healthy fog for industrial pollutants.
That's probably how it went. That would make sense to me. But it's been interesting that so many people in the United States and I guess all around the world have been taking notice of this.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know. The most popular topic of discussion outside of China is China's air.
What have you guys noticed about Chinese people discussing this? Has there been less feedback?
I haven't heard a single thing, actually.
I think it's wonderful. I mean, I think this is part of the maturation of the Chinese public consciousness regarding air pollution and sort of is a natural byproduct of that groundswell of interest in personal health stuff. I think it took a while to build up and gradually over time we saw signs of people being more aware and having like a higher... sort of a threshold base foundational understanding of the environmental conditions. And now I guess, you know, the gradual progression is like first you recognize these things, then you understand a little bit more about it, then you start to see all the PM2.5 masks appearing in 7-Eleven, and then, you know, a couple stages down the line of the development of public consciousness, you have things like pieces of media emerging that represent that growing public awareness. So I think that's just a symbol of the way that trend is growing in China.
I was on a flight yesterday and I was seated next to a Chinese colleague and I asked him about this video and what he thought about it and what his friends thought about it. And he said that there were a lot of disagreements among his friends over, you know, how they interpreted the video. And there were three different groups of them, he said. There was one group which entirely dismissed the video. There was another group which agreed with the video and was critical of the industrial pollution in China and also of the government.
Mm-hmm.
And then there was a third group which agreed with the party leadership but thought that the pollution was out of hand. And he said that they got really at each other's throats over this video in particular. He said that a lot of his friends thought that the video was produced with an agenda of discrediting the party.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought it's interesting what you said about how the reporter, I guess Tsai Jing is her name, I think, is supportive of the party and yet critical of the pollution situation.
Well, yeah, there's this false notion that to be critical of the party or any particular policy is to be unpatriotic. I mean, that you can be a supportive dissident. Yeah. And I think that's the kind of role that she's taking. And I think, I mean, judging by the conversation about the documentary that I've heard so far, it sounds like that's the kind of tone that she was trying to strike throughout the documentary.
Mm-hmm. And when I hear you describe that kind of spirited discourse, that sounds like a really healthy thing. I mean, that sort of reminds me of the kind of discussions that people have in the United States about environmental policy, and people seeing it from different perspectives in terms of, you know, weighing the economic benefits of industrial development versus the negative effects on public health.
But the video has been banned. It's outright banned.
I mean, that is probably not indicative of a healthy public discourse.
Exactly. But yeah, it's like, the way you make it sound is like, now there's a discussion about this, and this is a good thing. But
the discussion's out there. I mean, the video, if it has been viewed 200 million times, or give or take 50 million, like, that's still a huge amount of people. And the conversation's already started, and that they can't really wipe from the internet. So I think we'll link to the Seneca podcast, which had a full 35-40 minute podcast on this, and it was a really good discussion. But
if you're listening to our podcast, go listen to the Seneca podcast. Those guys are much smarter. They actually do their research. We have very cursory knowledge of the subjects that we touch upon, but that is not going to stop us from talking about them.
Yeah, well, I totally lost my point. Thanks, Eli. but yeah, that's a better, more in-depth discussion of what we're talking about right now. Anyways, you guys want to move on to some other stuff that we found on the internet about
China?
Sounds
good. Under the Dome.
Yeah, Under the Dome. Next, I came across a South China Morning Post article about Xi Jinping pushing the soccer agenda, or football, to our European and non-American listeners. So yeah, he's pushing the soccer agenda, and I didn't realize this from the article, but discussing it with my friend Andy McCauley, he was saying that he's going so far as to put soccer on the Gaokao, which I don't even know how you do that.
So
I mean,
that's like roughly equivalent to putting American football on the SATs.
Yeah, which is obviously how we got so good at American football.
That's how you get total top-down approach.
That is how you get kids to really like something. You make it part of their compulsory education system.
I mean,
what could go wrong? Nothing. Nothing could go wrong. Kids will be studying. I'm curious just about what that even means. How can you even put soccer onto the Gaokao?
Is there a physical element to the Gaokao at all at this point?
It's a sit-down test.
There's no push-ups.
I don't think there's any football drills involved.
Well, they're gonna be, and we'll find out. I don't know when that's enacted, and I'm not even 100% positive that this is true. Although Andy is really plugged into football, soccer in China. He's recently started. He's the head of the Chengdu International Football League here in Chengdu. And he's also
started a youth soccer program, youth football development program here in Chengdu,
right,
for Chinese and international kids.
And he's also been a member of the Chengdu International Football League, right, which is a league.
Yeah,
he's a competitive league, which you've played on.
He's actually the founder of the league. Andy McCauley and his partners, Dave and Iker, a few years ago used to play together in a Chinese league with myself and a lot of other expats in the city. And 3 or 4 years ago, they defected from that league and started their own international league that was a 7-a-side competition playing on half fields that was teams composed of all expats. And it kind of started out to be one country, one team, but quickly got much more mixed. But the sort of guiding principle of it is that it's not just run and administered by Chinese referees. I mean, it has an international league body that governs it, and it's probably more reflective of the international game in terms of the way that it's managed.
Yeah. So, anything else interesting in that article about why Xi Jinping would do this?
It's just not too many details in the article, really. Just that he's crazy about soccer. And I didn't realize that he was such a fanatic. But it's just a very Chinese idea that you could implement a top-down approach to making a sport popular.
I mean, I will say that that's not totally dissimilar from the way that they have tried to run Chinese youth soccer leagues in the past. And when we were a part of the local Chengdu soccer league, we used to go to the meetings that they would have with the various Chinese teams. And one of the complaints of the guys who ran the league was that there was a lot of interference by the provincial and national level soccer regulatory bodies who were trying to manage the way that amateur soccer leagues were implemented across the country. And to me, it seemed like a very put the cart before the horse kind of approach to jump-starting these movements. Because mm-hmm. the way to really have it is to have people build them from the ground up, to have people who are really enthusiastic feel like they have some ownership and some stake in the institutions that they're building up, and have them organically emerge through people's passions, rather than, you know, setting it up like a ghost town industrial development mm-hmm. and then just expecting people to show up and play according to your rules and the way that you want
to
do it.
Another way sports get popular here is to have one big superstar on the international scene, like Yao Ming in basketball and Lina in tennis. Both of those individuals really helped. And then I'm sure after their international success was realized, then there was government support behind them and like spreading their image throughout media. But that's how sports, at least in the past 15, 20 years, have gotten really popular. And now I see more kids playing tennis now.
Does that really make a big difference, though? Because I've been to some CBA games. One here in Chengdu, which I think we went with a group
from. Go China. Wales!
Go Wales!
Yeah, so it was a Wales game, right?
Landlocked Sichuan Wales.
So it was with World Peace, you know.
Ron Artest
was playing for the local team. He no longer is. But there's a rule within the CBA, within the Chinese Basketball Association, they can have two foreigners for each team. So every team has two foreigners.
Mm-hmm.
And they're almost all ex-NBA players. But the level of play is still at almost like low college level.
Mm-hmm.
So even with these kind of superstars, I feel like it's gotten more popular, but the skill level hasn't really risen.
Yeah, I mean, I think you're right. The sport being popular doesn't necessarily mean that China's going to get much better at it. But also,
I feel also that Xi Jinping is addressing a problem of Chinese skill in soccer, mm-hmm. not in popularity.
I think there are some things that you can do from a macro level institutionally to build the infrastructure that will allow local leagues to develop organically, but I think there's a limit to what you can do before you start to be counterproductive and have a real diminishing returns on the amount of investment that you put in there. I think you really have to let those things emerge organically.
Yeah, and I when Andy first told me this, that it was going to be on the Gaokao, the first thing I thought was there's going to be a huge backlash, and there's going to be generation after generation of kids that just hate soccer because they're forced to play it so they can get into school.
Right.
I mean, you know, if I was the Chinese leadership and I wanted to help develop our soccer programs, what I would do is I would start doing a little bit better job with urban planning and plotting out more green space so there would be more available fields, because that to me seems like the biggest constraint, the biggest bottleneck that's holding up the development of youth programs is just not having enough fields around.
Yeah, yeah. Andy actually had something to say about that. He said a lot of golf courses now are being turned into football fields because there's a limit there from the corruption crackdown,
right.
From the past couple of years. There's been a limit on land that can be used for golf courses, and even some of the land that has already been turned into golf courses is now being repurposed for football fields.
That is the kind of authoritarian redistribution of wealth that I can get behind, turning golf courses into soccer courses.
Yeah, that gets the Chengdu Living stamp of approval.
You know, on a related topic, something that we were talking about discussing is a recent post that came up on Reddit that was about China's attempts to export their culture internationally, and I think maybe this is a segue that we could move into that.
It's about the Confucian Institute, right?
It's about the Confucian Institute, and essentially the guy who was making the post was highlighting some of the shortcomings and the failures of the Chinese government to try to export Chinese culture, because their approach was very much top-down as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's been an amazing failure, I think, because I feel like everyone around the world, or certainly a lot of people, have appreciation for traditional aspects of Chinese culture. And yet, China does not capitalize on that at all. They do things only to stifle the popularity of those things.
Well, you know, I think also the leadership sometimes does a very poor job in terms of picking winners, in terms of anticipating what aspects of Chinese culture are going to have appeal to the international community. And the types of Chinese culture that they tend to promote tend to be hyper-traditional, in some ways hyper-stereotypical of what people imagine of Chinese culture, and don't really reflect where the most vibrant, robust, you know, lively, current...
Like what kind of stereotypes?
Well, just that it's all like... Peking opera and like minzu wu, you know, like folk Chinese traditional folk dance and Peking opera and people playing the guzheng and you know, not reflecting sort of the
most people don't care about that.
Exactly. I mean, in the United States, obviously there's lots and lots of interest in China, but the range of things of Chinese culture that the Chinese leadership is comfortable representing China internationally is really quite limited. And
there's just such a massive cultural chasm between China and the rest of the world. And I'm reminded of this all the time, but last week I was attending a conference in San Francisco, and it was attended by a lot of Chinese companies who are promoting their companies and their products. And it's just blatantly obvious that the Chinese companies are just, you know, way out of their element. But the thing is, I think they have so much money and so much revenue that they have a lot of clout. You know, they think they have the power to figure this out and bridge this gap, but they obviously do not. Often when they release new products, they want to promote them at these conferences around the world. And they'll spend, you know, $1 million or more to promote these things with these, you know, massive displays. And they include song and dance, you know, some of which is in Chinese or some of which is just, you know, unintelligible to non-Chinese people. And people just gather around and check it out, and they're just like, what the hell is this?
Right.
They're just like, what the fuck is going on? Like, I cannot understand what is happening here at all. And all the Chinese people who are doing this are like, pretty good, right? There's just a complete disconnect between what they think they're doing and what they're actually doing.
I mean, it seems like there's also a lack of desire to get input on what they might be doing wrong. Because, like, I mean, the post that Eli first mentioned is about... specifically about the music and theater and sort of the arts culture, but you have a look into sort of a different
the modern tech culture, sector, yeah,
the tech center, and specifically
this
gaming.
Is actually, I mean, this is not just in the gaming industry, which is the industry I work in, but CES, Consumer Electronics Show, is every year, and there are always articles every year about how some stupid Chinese company is doing some, you know, embarrassing display.
Well,
Most recently it was Huawei. It's always these massive, you know.
What was embarrassing about the Huawei display?
They were introducing a new product and they did it in a way that was just extremely uncouth.
You know, I think you guys are hitting on something where there's a sort of lack of self-awareness, and it's kind of a one-way conversation where it's like, I'm going to come over and promote, you know, my products, or in this case, you know, my culture in this new cultural marketplace, but without listening and without reacting to what actually is getting traction there. And you know, you can still have an impact by doing that. If you splash a lot of money around, you're going to have some kind of impact, but your return on investment is going to be really low, and it's not going to be the kind of strategy that's going to be self-sustaining in the future. It's the kind of thing where, you know, you splash a bunch of money and you have an impact, and then it fades very quickly.
The impact is getting laughed at. The articles, the press about it is getting laughed at. I mean, in almost every case.
Well, you know, all right, let's look at what the guy was talking about in the post, which is the Confucian Institute. And
right.
They were saying that, you know, this is an example of, in this case, I would say a very good product that they have, which is Chinese language. But the failure is from essentially a management strategy perspective, where it's coming very top down, and where they have this cultural promotion initiative that they've launched all over the world. And maybe we can give a little bit of background information on what the Confucian Institute is.
Right. So describe what the Confucian Institute is first, and what the content of the post is.
Okay. The Confucian Institute is a massive soft power initiative funded by the Chinese government that is under the guise of trying to teach Chinese as a second language internationally in various countries, and subsidizes sending Chinese teachers to different countries to help teach Chinese language programs programs in various educational institutions. The downside, as this guy who had worked within the ministry pointed out, was that they come with a lot of different strings attached, so that they require, you know, sort of semi-propaganda little bits of culture to be transmitted through these ostensibly language learning exercises.
And it's not just propaganda. It's also, like, there have been a lot of issues where they will override the university's hiring policies. And if somebody, for instance, practices Falun Gong, they will take that person out of the program based on their religious worship, which...
So they will enact Chinese rules outside of China through this program.
Right, it's extraterritorial. They use the Confucius Institute to practice extraterritorial control. And there are a lot of instances where there are universities that will allow them to do this because they're getting a pretty invaluable resource, people coming
to teach language programs. Fewer and fewer, from what I understand.
Right. I mean,
they're starting to
get some
universities,
pushback.
Yeah, they're getting some pushback. Universities are declining offers to host this program.
Right.
And I think existing ones are also beginning to back out.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And partly because, you know, again, it's very top down, and the leadership has a lot of sensitivity. You know, if there's politically sensitive material on the campus, maybe they'll threaten to withdraw funding. Or essentially, this is a gift with a bunch of strings attached, mm-hmm. that it turns out to be as much of a burden as it is a gift.
It's a little bit of a Trojan horse. I mean, because you think it's a language program, and then once it gets installed, you realize that it's not.
Absolutely is a Trojan horse. That being said, I feel like essentially all soft power initiatives are a kind of Trojan horse. The question is whether or not they're a Trojan horse that has an effect on your heartstrings by, you know, making you actually love U.S. culture because you get exposed to it. And then you're like, wow, you know, maybe those Americans aren't like a stupid, exploitative capitalist.
Well, if a soft power initiative is aligned with the goals of the community that it's in, then that's a win-win for both sides.
Mm-hmm.
But if the, you know, agenda of the Communist Party goes against the countries that it's in, then that's clearly going to result in some conflict.
I guess what I would say is they would probably do a better job of making everybody love China if they stripped away all of the political dimension to it entirely and just made it purely Chinese language and just let people learn the Chinese language. And through the Chinese language, which is a really, really wonderful thing and is like a great treasure in the history of Chinese culture, they would bring people to China and make people like see China in a new light and relate to China. And maybe,
I totally agree. But I think that's not possible for the reason that there is nothing in China or related to China that is not political in some way.
At this point, I mean, because they're politicizing
everything.
And
I'm talking in mainland China. I don't mean Taiwan or Hong Kong, but anything that China is involved with has a political dimension.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, this even, like, we're talking about soft power in this, in the scope of the Confucius Institute, but also it comes in lots of different forms, like Hollywood co-productions. I forget what the most recent one was. It one of the Iron Man movies or one of the Transformer movies? But yeah, these can be like...
All of these are pandering to China. Yeah, really interesting one yesterday was Apple hosted an event yesterday, actually almost 24 hours ago, and it was releasing information about the Apple Watch and an updated MacBook. And as soon... I watched it live. As soon as it begun, the first thing they showed was a new Apple store in Hangzhou.
Mm-hmm.
And the first 10 minutes of the presentation were all about China. How they have 26 Apple stores in China. They're going to have 40 by the end of the year. And later they showed the watch, right? And they're
mm-hmm.
demoing apps running on the watch. One of the first ones they showed was WeChat.
Woo! Wow.
And they say, hey, here's WeChat running on the watch. And this is like the best exposure that WeChat has ever gotten.
Yep.
By a long, long shot.
Wild.
And, you know, they show the watch later and you can see Weibo installed on the watch.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, they're really, really pandering to China very hard. And there are movie studios doing that as well. There are a lot of different companies
mm-hmm.
which are doing that because they want access to the Chinese market. Mark Zuckerberg speaking Chinese. I mean, he's begging at China's doorstep.
Yeah, yeah. And he says it's just because his wife is Chinese and he wants to talk to his waipo or whatever. But that's I don't buy it either. I think that's a great cover.
I don't think it's that great of a cover. I think Chinese people can see right through it.
I think it's okay to be both. I think it's okay to be both.
Okay.
Ladies and gentlemen, time at the Regal. A young man went out and made a name for himself. He's been on every record.
start talking about things that are a little bit more local. We've got some interesting stuff that happened on the forum this week.
What forum? What forum is that, Dan?
That's the Chengdu Living Forum, chengduliving.com/forum.
Yeah,
slash.
Also chengduforum.com works as well.
Chengduforum.com works as well. I didn't even know that. Well, one of the most awesome things that happened was Johnny Five, the guy who opened the donut shop not too long ago, he did an AMA and Ask Me Anything, and I think this is unprecedented in forum history. Is that right, Charlie?
I think so, too. I don't remember anyone doing it before. I think it's an awesome thing. It's a really cool thing. It's a smart thing of him to do.
He welcomed everybody to ask him anything regarding his personal life, his business. Some of the questions got kind of absurd, and he fielded every single one with
aplomb.
With aplomb.
Yeah, really, there were a lot of asinine questions.
I think
dealt with it very well.
That's kind of par for the course in the Reddit AMA universe. I mean,
not really, because here's the thing. There's a major...
Totally.
No.
In the Reddit AMA...
it's not. I'll explain to you what the difference is. The difference is of architecture. The way a forum works is it's linear. Posts are based on time that they're posted. Reddit works differently. It's based on upvotes and downvotes. So Reddit has a system wherein the best content surfaces to the top.
Mm-hmm.
Because Chengdu Living is a forum, it does not have such a system. So asinine
it's all
questions,
flotsam, just
exactly.
The top.
It's linear.
Mm.
And so on Reddit, the asinine questions get downvoted and no one ever sees them. On Chengdu Living, it doesn't work that way. So it's different. But regardless, he dealt with these asinine questions pretty well, I thought.
I think people were just testing him. It was very graceful the way he dealt with a lot of them. You got a really good sense of his personality. He posted his picture with his original post and he just seemed to be loving it.
I think a lot of people are impressed, and I think more people will check him out, and he's on more people's radar. I think it's a smart thing him to do.
Right. Yeah. So for anybody who doesn't know, this is a new donut shop that just opened up in the Tongzilin area. I believe it's on Tongzilin Nanlu?
Right near Singapore Gardens.
Yeah, right near the Singapore Gardens. And if you guys know where Mike's Pizza is, it's just a few doors down from there.
Mm-hmm.
And Johnny recently relocated to Chengdu, and he makes a mean donut.
Donuts and cronuts and apple fritters. And I've been there twice. And
he was talking about juice and some other things as well.
Jews?
Jews!
He makes juice,
the kind that comes from fruit.
The AMA went really off the rails. It's like, talk about your political views.
So there was something else that Johnny was involved in, and it wasn't on the Chengdu forums, but it was on... it was on WeChat, and this just popped up in my feed yesterday. And
it's a co-promotion between Johnny Five Donuts and several other expat-run Western restaurants in the Chengdu area.
Right, Johnny Five's, Mike's Pizza, Lazy Pug, and Red Beard Burgers. And it's a little bit complicated. I might screw up explaining it right here. But basically, it's a contest. The way you enter the contest is you go in to any of those establishments. You buy...
Buy something,
take a picture, post it on WeChat. Each time you post one of those pictures on WeChat, you enter into the contest. You can enter in as many times as you want. But after a certain period of time, they're going to choose randomly one of those entrants. And that person, the winner of the contest, is going to win a free year of one of those store's products. Not every day you get one chance to cash in on that per week. So
I wonder if each one of them are thinking, oh, I hope they don't pick me. That's a lot of money, 88 kwai per week. I feel like whoever wins that will probably have a small obligation on their shoulders to regularly visit the place wherever they win.
That's right. And actually, when I was looking at those contest guidelines, I think it is when you post the picture, you need to number one follow all those people on WeChat.
That's the smartest part of it.
And then that's right. And then also maybe you need to at them or make some comment to them.
Right, because otherwise, how could they know?
Right, when you post your picture on there, and there was no limit on the number of entries that you mm-hmm. can have. But
where can people find these guidelines?
We're gonna take screenshots of it, and we're gonna to post it in the description, just so in case we got any of the details wrong, we'll cover our asses and put the details in the description.
Yeah, I was thinking, boy, if whoever wins that, it's going to be, you know, it's a dietary burden to eat donuts or eat pizza.
You're just
right, exactly. Do I want to win that or not?
Yeah, that's exactly right. It's like I'm obligated to eat lots of Western food all the time.
It's like I'm gonna be eating pizza every week if I win that. Is that something I really want? Is that really
yes. It's pizza every week is that was a reality in America, and now it's like, well, I get pizza once every couple months. Yeah, I would totally. I don't know what you guys are talking about. I would be thrilled to have that. You guys are terrible.
But good stuff and smart marketing by Johnny's and by Redbeard and by Lazy Pug to tap into the social media network and to really get up on the platforms that are popping right now.
Yeah, and we want to see more of this. People using WeChat in creative ways.
We want free stuff.
Yeah, we want free stuff. We want the opportunity to win free stuff. And we want to interact with your company in a more interesting
personalized way.
Personalized way, absolutely. So I was really kind of excited to see that. I think that just popped up on my WeChat feed yesterday.
So all of our WeChat feeds are going to be filled with pictures of donuts?
Oh, yeah. I mean, that itself is going to drive a lot of business, I think.
That's a really good point, yeah.
Yeah, that's kind of awesome. Was there anything else interesting on the forum or anything else interesting happening in Chengdu, guys, that popped up on your radar?
Yeah, what were the other things? The Bookworm Festival.
Oh,
the
right.
The Literary Festival at the Bookworm.
Yeah, the Bookworm Festival, it starts on the 13th, and it goes for how long? It goes for like 6 days?
Yeah, in Chengdu from March 13th to March 29th. Wide variety of authors who are coming to Chengdu. They always have a slate of well-regarded and renowned authors about regarding China and travel writing, as well as various other topics. Very strong slate of authors coming through this year. I wish I could boast a more deep knowledge about their particular works, but...
But you're an uncultured mess.
I'm an uncultured mess.
Exactly. And it's a...
If it's not on a podcast, I probably don't know about it.
Right. It's a miracle you still have the ability to read.
Yeah, but for all the thoughtful people out there, get thee to the Bookworm.
Yeah. The details are on the Bookworm website, which we'll put in the description. They have flyers, one that we're looking at now, and we peruse it, and the three of us know none of the authors...
I'll say this: the Bookworm Literary Festival has been happening for a long time in Chengdu. It's a well-respected and well-attended event, and I can definitely recommend it. I checked it out last year for I think 2 days, and I enjoyed it. And also on Chengdu Living, we have an interview with Peter Goff, the founder and manager of Bookworm Chengdu and all the bookworms. And so he described what the literary festival is about, and it's a really good thing for Chengdu and for Beijing and all the cities it's in. Mm-hmm. So it's definitely something I can recommend.
It's something to be supported, and it's curated by people with good taste and good community support.
Yeah, something else that I would also like to plug that goes down at the Bookworm is once a month on, I think, it's either the first or the last or the second or third Thursday of each month. I'm not sure which one. Rob has been doing open mic stand-up comedy night.
The next one's really soon, right?
The next one, I think, is this week. Today is March 10th. And this one is happening on Thursday. I've gone once. I've performed once. And it's just a great environment. Really welcoming.
Are you going to perform at this next one?
I don't have any material prepared, and it's been a pretty busy week, but I am always thinking, of jokes, and...
So that's a yes.
That's a yes.
Okay, great.
Just get me a little loaded, and I'll go on stage.
Done.
I also have aspirations of standing up on stage and making fun of myself.
You should do that.
Yeah.
We should all go on Thursday. That sounds like fun. I've still not been. I've been meaning to go to this for like 4 months.
It's super fun, and I give Rob a lot of credit. The attendance wasn't too good at the beginning. It's grown, and there's the night that I did it, there were 10 people going up on stage. So it's really cool.
That's a lot.
Really good activity. Good on Rob. Good on the Bookworm.
Local comedy event. Really, really valuable thing to have.
Yeah,
I went to an amazing comedy event last week in Oakland, California, which I really enjoyed. So I'm very excited to check something out in Chengdu. Check us out online, chunduliving.com, and on the forum, which is chunduforum.com. Subscribe to our podcast. It's available on iTunes and on Stitcher. I think this is maybe our 6th or 7th podcast, something like that.
Too many to count, man.
So, yeah, we got about a half a comment. Dozen. Leave a comment on iTunes. Share it with your friends.
You can't leave a comment on iTunes. Subscribe on iTunes. Leave a comment in the post. And if you have any suggestions or ideas about upcoming podcasts, any concepts you'd like to talk about, or if you have an idea, feel free to get in touch with us. There's a contact page on Chunda Living where you can reach us.
Mm-hmm.
And thank you for listening.
Yeah.
See you later. See you next time.
Bye. Thank you.